From NPR and WBUR, this is special coverage of Speaker John Boehner's retirement announcement, which is scheduled to start momentarily. I'm Peter O'Dowd, along with Meghna Chakrabarty. And joining us as we wait for Speaker Boehner is NPR senior Washington correspondent Ron Elving and NPR White House correspondent Tamara Keith. Welcome to you both.
Thank you.
Good to be here.
Okay, Tam, let's start with you. This morning, John Boehner was Speaker. We learned by the end of October now he will not be. How much of a surprise was this?
Well, the timing is perhaps a surprise, but the matter of the fact is that we knew at some point John Boehner was going to either step down or possibly some of his members were hoping to oust him as Speaker. So there was definitely a sense that he was not in this for the long haul. He's 65 years old. He, at various times along the way, was not enjoying doing battle with the conservatives of his party. It was very clear that John Boehner does not keep his emotions inside particularly well. And there are very many times where he clearly was not enjoying doing battle with his fellow Republicans.
Well, Ron Elving, let's talk about that. You and I have spoken on this program before about the challenge that John Boehner was facing within his own party. How bad did it get for him in these days leading up to this announcement?
It clearly got worse than he had anticipated, and it clearly had taken on a new life with respect to the Planned Parenthood fight. Now, this might seem a far cry from all the different issues of the federal government being kept going after the end of this fiscal year, September 30th, next week. But this issue has so consumed the social conservative portion of the House Republicans that they are willing to do just about anything to force a confrontation with President Obama over Planned Parenthood per se. Mm. So right now, it looks as though they were willing to bring a motion to try to knock John Boehner out of the speakership or strip him of his powers on that last night of the fiscal year when they would otherwise be voting on what we call a continuing resolution, which is a kick-the-can budgetary measure by which they keep spending even without passing a budget or any of the normal appropriations bills. And that has been the usual strategy for getting around the most conservative elements of the House Republicans. And they had a new tactic, and it involved John Boehner's job. And so he decided, that's it, game over, you can take this job.
What does it mean for the government shutdown, Tam?
Well, here's the remarkable thing. It's not going to happen at the end of this month. I don't know what John Boehner said to the Liberty Caucus and others in his party that appeased them. Maybe he said, I'll go away. But they are now going to vote on what's called a clean CR, a clean continuing resolution to fund the government. I'm not sure for how many months. There will not be a big government shutdown fight in the next week and a half, as had been expected. Then there will be a new speaker, and, entirely possible that there will be a government shutdown fight or something else that comes later. You know, the new speaker will come in, and that person is going to have to deal with this nearly impossible job that John Boehner is giving up.
Hmm. Ron, if I remember correctly, a speaker hasn't stepped down from the speakership voluntarily before the end of his or her term in, what, decades? So this is a big deal. And I'm just wondering, John Boehner certainly has his supporters. What are they to make of this moment?
Well, you know, Jim Wright stepped down, and he was not happy about it in 1989, but that was an ethics matter. That was a matter of his own caucus deserting him and the other caucus hating him intensely over what included, at least, ethics violations, and that was his burden to bear. Here we have somebody who is no longer able to deal with the job that he was given by the majority of his own party, no longer able to deal with the political turmoil in his own party. So it's really quite a different resignation, and one that I really can't find a clear precedent for, just in a quick survey back over House history, this is a highly unusual circumstance. So it's not clear that anyone else, and we're assuming at this hour that Kevin McCarthy, who's been the number two for the past year, is going to step up into the breach. But we don't know that for certain because we don't know whether or not he can marshal more support among the 30 or 40 most conservative, most activist Republicans.
Well, let's talk about the reaction of some of those Republicans. Here's some sound from Marco Rubio, the Florida senator, who is also a presidential candidate. He was talking at the Values Voter Summit in Washington. Do we have that tape? Okay.
I could reenact it for
you. Okay, well, yeah, okay.
There's just a lot of cheering in it.
Essentially, yes. The cheering is robust. It is loud. It clearly, the conservative wing of the Republican Party is very pleased with this, which shows what, Tam? That Boehner basically did he lose control of his party?
I think that there are a lot of people who feel like they slayed a giant. They got the speaker to step down. He has been doing battle with the most conservative wing of his party, basically since he became speaker. He became speaker as part of this 2010 Tea Party wave. Part of the Tea Party wave, the whole idea of it was like, we're going to come in and we are not going to do business as usual. We are going to, you know, we're going to fight the fight. And Boehner had to keep saying, well, you know, I agree with you in principle, but we just don't have the numbers to do what we want to do. I mean, for a long time, Republicans had one half of one third of the government, as John Boehner liked to say again and again and again. Well, now they have one third of the government, but it's actually not enough. And in fact, when those most conservative Republicans peel off from Boehner and say, we're not going to vote for this spending bill because it's not pure enough. Well, then Boehner has to turn to the Democrats to get enough votes.
Right.
You know, that's not really a position that he wants to be in.
Well, I mean, this might be instructive just to sort of list some of the fights he's had since the start. I mean, there was the fiscal cliff, right? Then soon thereafter, there was a battle.
No. Oh, go back.
Even
before
further.
The fiscal cliff, there
it's never
was...
easy to be the Speaker of the House, probably.
No, but
the
initially...
grand bargain.
There was the grand bargain that was the result of the debt ceiling fight.
Right.
That was back in...
2011.
Yeah, in 2011. There was almost a government shutdown in May of 2011, just a few months after he became Speaker. Then the whole U.S. government was on the precipice that summer, that July into August. And then, of course, there was the fiscal cliff,
right,
at the end of 2012. And then there was the ever-thrilling government shutdown in 2013.
And in between, there was a farm bill fight, which usually is something that you should have bipartisan support on, right? I mean...
And there was a transportation bill fight. And I mean, like, pretty much anything that needed to was like a must get done to keep the government functioning.
It seems
it
like every
into a fight.
Sorry, Tim, but it seems like every defeat Boehner suffered only just further emboldened the far right wing to the point where this, while it is surprising, was absolutely inevitable.
Emboldened, yes, I would say, but also frustrated.
Okay, we're hearing John Boehner is at the podium now, and
just saying that on my way to work in the morning. Listen, my mission every day is to fight for a smaller, less costly, and more accountable government. And over the last 5 years, our majority has advanced conservative reforms that will help our children and their children. We're now on track to cut government spending by $2.1 trillion over the next 10 years. We've made the first real entitlement reform in nearly two decades. And we've protected 99% of the American people from an increase in our taxes. And we've done all this with a Democrat in the White House. So I'm proud of what we've accomplished. But more than anything, my first job as Speaker is to protect the institution. A lot of you know that, now know, that my plan was to step down at the end of last year. I decided in November of 2010 that when I was elected Speaker, that serving two terms would have been plenty. But in June of last year, when it became clear that the majority leader lost his election, I frankly didn't believe it was right for me to leave at the end of last year. So my goal was to leave at the end of this year. So I planned actually on my birthday, November 17th, to announce that I was leaving at the end of the year. But it's become clear to me that this prolonged leadership turmoil would do irreparable harm to the institution. So this morning I informed my colleagues that I would resign from the speakership and resign from Congress at the end of October. Now, as you've often heard me say, this isn't about me. It's about the people. It's about the institution. Just yesterday, we witnessed the awesome sight of Pope Francis addressing the greatest legislative body in the world. And I hope that we will all heed his call to live by the golden rule. But last night I started to think about this. And this morning I woke up and I said my prayers, as I always do. And I decided, you know, today's the day I'm going to do this. As simple as that. That's the code I've always lived by. If you do the right things for the right reasons, the right things will happen. And I know good things lie ahead for this house in this country, and I'm proud of what we've accomplished, especially proud of my team. You know, I've been here my 25th year here, and I've succeeded in large part because I've put a staff together and a team together, many of which have been with me for a long time. And without a great staff, you can't be a great member, and you certainly can't be a great speaker. I want to thank my family for putting up with this all these years. My poor girls, who are now 37 and 35, their first campaign photo was in July of 1981. And so they've had to endure all this. It's one thing for me to have to endure it. I've got thick skin. You know, the girls and my wife, they've had to put up with a lot over the years. Let me express my gratitude to my constituents who've sent me here 13 times over the last 25 years. You can't get here without getting votes. I said this often. People ask me, what's the greatest thing about being speaker or about being an elected official? And I said, well, it's the people you get to meet. You know, I've met tens of thousands of people in my own congressional district that I would never have met other than the fact that I decided to run for Congress. And over the years, as I traveled on behalf of my colleagues in the party, I've met tens of thousands of additional people all over the country. And you meet rich people, you meet poor people, you meet interesting people, and probably a few boring ones along the way. But I can tell you that 99.9% of the people I meet on the road, anywhere, could not be nicer than they've been. It's been wonderful. It's been an honor to serve in this institution. And with that, all right, Junior, go ahead.
Speaker Boehner, you were noticeably overcome with emotion yesterday.
Really? Well, what a surprise!
Last night, if the grace of Pope Francis led you to this decision?
No. Yesterday was a wonderful day. It really was. And was I emotional yesterday? Yeah, I think I was. I was really emotional in a moment that really no one saw. As the Pope and I were getting ready to exit the building, we found ourselves alone. And the Pope grabbed my left arm and said some very kind words to me about my commitment to kids and education. And the Pope puts his arm around me and kind of pulls me to him and says, please pray for me. Well, who am I to pray for the Pope? But I did. Listen, it was never about the vote, all right? There was never any doubt about whether I could survive a vote. I don't want my members to have to go through this. I certainly don't want the institution to go through this. And so, especially when, you know, I knew I was thinking about walking out the door anyway. So it's the right time to do it, and frankly, I am entirely comfortable doing it.
Mr. Speaker, I've heard you say before that a leader who doesn't have anybody following him is just a guy taking a walk.
That's right. I got plenty of people following me, but this turmoil that's been churning now for a couple of months is not good for the members, and it's not good for the institution. And if I wasn't planning on leaving here soon, I can tell you I would not have done this.
If I may, yeah. There are people who are on the right in your caucus, and even outside of this institution, who have been wanting you to step down for some time.
Huh.
Feel that they have a victory.
Oh.
You're hearing Speaker of the House John Boehner talking to the press about the decision he made just this morning to resign as Speaker and from Congress at the end of October, a surprise decision that he said he made after thinking and praying. And this morning he decided to do it because he wanted to prevent doing irreparable harm to the institution of Congress and the institution of the House, and that he believed prolonged turmoil over his leadership would cause that irreparable harm. We're joined by NPR's Tamara Keith and Ron Elving, who are listening to Speaker John Boehner with us. Tamara, what do you make of what we just heard?
Well, I think that he has no regrets. That, you know, he says he woke up, he prayed, and he said, all right, let's just do this thing. He had been planning, he said, to step down and make it official on his birthday in November. But and I think it's totally plausible. He felt like he would survive a challenge to his leadership in the weeks ahead. But he didn't feel like it was worth doing that if then he, a month later, was going to say, I'm done with this place. Bye. So I think he had made the decision. And, you know, I've been in that place before where I've decided I'm leaving a job. And then why keep up the illusion? Mm-hmm. Just be done.
Ron Elving, the part there when he was talking, a very emotional moment where he was talking about the Pope putting his arm around him, asking the Pope asking John Boehner to pray for him, choking up there. John Boehner acknowledged that he has the tendency to get very emotional. What role do you think the Pope played in all of this? This was one of the proudest moments of his career. The next day, here's this announcement.
John Boehner is a Catholic and a quite serious one, and he was clearly moved throughout the day yesterday as the Pope visited the Capitol. He oftentimes seemed to be about to weep as he sat listening to the Pope, and we have seen him cry in public. He is a man who is willing to do that. He clearly was moved also by the Pope's gesture to him, which he just described in his news conference, saying the Pope had asked him, John Boehner, to pray for the Pope, and that that was something that obviously struck John Boehner as an extraordinary request from the Holy Father. So he has obviously been at a high point of high pitch emotionally for the last 24, 48 hours. That coming in combination with his obvious realization that the rebels in the House Republican caucus were not going to let him serve out this fall without a challenge vote, without some kind of a floor vote. He did not want to have that. He thought it would be damaging to the caucus, damaging to the institution, as he's said. So all of these things came together. I think the Pope was probably a large influence.
Right. So one last question for you both. I remember an interview that Boehner gave sometime last year to Jay Leno, of all things, where he said, you know, he grew up around a bar and with a large family, and he used to, when he was a kid, mop floors, do dishes, wait tables. I'm reading a quote here from that interview. And he said, you have to learn to deal with every jerk that walks in the door. Trust me, I needed all the skills I learned growing up to do my job. I mean, part of me just wonders, John Boehner was just tired of having to do that job.
I have another quote for you, which was something that one of his staffers said, that he used to work as a road worker in Cincinnati, Ohio, and he drove a bulldozer in the winter in Cincinnati, Ohio. And then his staffer said, so clearly, his hardest job was not being Speaker of the House.
NPR's Tamara Keith, along with Ron Elving. I'm Peter O'Dowd.
I'm Meghna Chakrabarty.